As it Barney does. That's the way I feel right now. You know? Lord of mercy, good morning. Ain't it good to be sober? Oh, yeah. I forgot to tip the top button. I can't wear a tie, my neck's too big. Of course, I could have bought one bigger. It takes me a minute, y'all, to just sort of calm down and let God take a hoot of this thing. He said he would this morning. I'm sure yesterday y'all seen some of the stuff that I put up with, you know, like that Al-Anon handshake. Y'all seen that yesterday, didn't you? And, you know, I was sitting over there. She didn't want me to sit in front of her where she could look at me, so... She made me sit over, told me to sit over there. You see me change that from make to asked, but she made me sit over there. And y'all notice that handshake was still going right like that. So I'm used to that and I love it. That's my sweetheart. I love her very much. I was sitting in my room, but I want to. Oh, yeah, let me, Jerry mentioned something. Let me tell y'all something about Jerry. I know Jerry back when. And I was sitting at the bar one night, and Jerry comes walking in. He sits down side of me. And we were both drinking, you know. And I hadn't had as many as Jerry. But I kept sitting there, and I kept looking around at him, and I said, damn. I'd look over at him, and he'd look at me, and he'd just smile. And I said, damn, what? I looked over, and I said, Jerry. He said, yeah. I said, have you done something in your britches, boy? And he looked at me, and he says, yes, I have. I said, God, Jerry. I said, well, why don't you go clean up? He said, I ain't through yet. That's what I was told about alcoholism. Alcoholism is sort of like making love to a gorilla. You ain't through until the gorilla's through. And that's been my experience. See, I'm one of them that's standing here this morning, and I always give my sobriety date in my home group. To me, you can be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but to me, you're not a member if you don't go to meetings and if you ain't got a home group. My home group is the Waycross group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We started that group in 19... They did. They started it in 1938. And it's still going on. We were registered with the state in 1940. I got a birthday flyer where they had birthday parties in 1946. And, you know, that means a lot to this old boy. I go look at the history. I want to know about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And stuff like that's very important to me. My sobriety date is March the 9th. In 1982. Now, I didn't pick that date, y'all. That's the day after my baby girl's birthday, the one Brandy was talking about with the halo. Linda was talking about named Brandy. Her birthday was March 8th. Why I got sober not March the 9th or why, I have no idea. I've heard a lot of them say, when I get ready... When I got ready, I do this. When I got ready, I decided, this time is the time. This time, I'm serious about this. This time, I'm really going to do it. Well, I didn't pick the time. The last damn thing, I'm not one of them that come walking by. I think Adam was talking about it last night. I'm not one that come walking by and says, you know what? I'm going to join Alcoholics Anonymous. That'll be the thing for me to do. I want to go see them bunch. That ain't my. Hey, I did not want to get sober. I did not want a damn thing to do. Never even heard of it. I come in AA in 1977. This thing is so simple until it took me until 1983 to get a year. There's a lot of things that I thought need changing. It's too simple. And when I come in, I thought in 77, I thought there was a lot that needed changing. But like this morning, I would have never thought that I'd be sitting. You know, this thing is, Jerry was talking about the theme, sharing. We share and love. And I mean, look at it. See and share our love. There's an old buddy of mine stood right here behind this podium on a Sunday morning. His name was Rip Smith. Me and Rip was just like that. It's for you, old buddy. Because he's dead now. But I know he's looking over. There's another one. Ed Arnold. Ed Arnold stood right here on a Sunday morning. After that, he asked me and Linda, would we run his wife? We were good friends. Would he run his wife on down to Albany on our way home? Ed had to go to Tennessee to go to a training. He was going to get his NCAC. He was a substance abuse counselor. He left town. He went to Tennessee, and me and Linda took his wife home. The next day, his wife called us crying. She said Ed was drunk. Ed never sober up after 9 years sobriety. And he talked standing right here. Give one of the best talks you ever seen. See, it tells us in our book, and y'all heard Adam talking a lot about it last night, about our book. We got one day at a time, a daily decree based on our spiritual condition. This morning I was sitting up there in my room, and I shared this with my sister and Dana. And this morning I was sitting there, and I looked on the table side of me. It was Linda's Al-Anon book, and I picked it up and I read it. And it's her book is Courage to Change. And when I read that, I could feel him. He was right there. I know he was there. I felt him. There was no doubt in my mind that God was right there. It wasn't her laying on the bed. But if you know what I'm talking about, you know. It's not a feeling that you can stand here and explain. But he was right there. And that's the way it's been throughout my life, drunk or sober. My mama just died March the 4th of this year. That's the reason I'm standing here. Somebody was praying for me, or I wouldn't have got sober. Mama prayed for this old boy. She's one to never let go. Everybody else let me go. I understood that. I'd have let me go too. But Mama never did. She wanted her boy to have the best. And I'm sorry I'm a little emotional, but she ain't been gone that long. But I know she's right there with Daddy, and I know right where she's at. And in my meditation book every morning when I open it up, I got a picture of Mama and Daddy. And I always look at it and say, Mama, I'm still doing what you told me to do. And I'm here this morning. And I'm going to stand up here this morning, and I'm going to try to share myself with y'all. And this is my story. It ain't Linda's. This is my story this time. When I was walking down here this morning, I'm going to share this before I get going. And when I got in the elevator, my phone rang. It was my baby girl, Brandy. She says, "Daddy, I just wanted you to know I love you." That's all she said. I said, "I do you too." Walked on out that door. And I got there, and there was Jerry and them sitting there, him and Jeanette and Adam. And I looked at them, and I could feel the love coming, just like this slogan y'all talking about. This weekend has been full of it, y'all. I mean, I'm up to here this morning with it. I mean, and it's something that you can't find anywhere except, as far as I'm concerned, Alcoholics Anonymous. We know each other. When I tell you I was an alcoholic, you knew exactly who I was and where I've been. And then when I got right there, just before I got right there, when I first got up, I got a text. Yeah, I do that too. I flipped it over there, and it's the first time I ever got one. But our son texted me and said, "Daddy, I love you." It's just, it didn't stop there. I got right here just before the door, and my phone went off again. I said, "What the hell is up?" And I hit it, and it was my oldest daughter that lives in Virginia. The one that was, she can remember the alcoholism very well. And she says, "Daddy, I'm in a mess." I said, "What's the matter, Purr?" She says, "Ellie, she's leaving for college today. I can't do it, Daddy. I just can't do it." I said, "Payback's hell, ain't it, baby?" But that girl done the best thing in the world, because she was headed the wrong direction. And she joined the Navy. And that's what turned that child around. Her and Linda used to fight. God almighty knows. They used to try to get me between them, and I'd go the other way. Hell, I wasn't about to get between them two. But she's my sweetheart. She is one of them that is, I'll tell you all about it a little bit later. Okay, I'm a real alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic, as Joe was talking about, is the hopeless variety. That's the reason I told Joe when he came by me, he said, "I stopped at that bar and I drank me one Corolla." I said, "Joe, if you just drank one Corolla, you don't need to get behind that damn mic." Because that ain't where we stop. Because once I take that drink, that phenomenon of craving does set in. And I don't know where I'm going or when I'm going to sober up. And that's the bottom line. And that's the way I drank. And I wasn't one of them that start and stop and all this here. I went all the way. I was married to another lady for 9 years before I met Linda. I'm one of them that believe that alcoholism, that you are not one that chose to have it. I'm one of them that believes that it chose you. You were born with it. I don't believe that you drank yourself into alcoholism. You can take 10 people and you can put them all in a house, leave them in there for 30 days, and every day give them dope. Every day. When they walk out of that house, you're going to have 10 people addicted. Ain't no doubt. You can take 10 people, you can put them in there and give them liquor every day for 30 days. When they walk out there, you may have one, maybe two, alcoholics. They all won't be addicted to alcohol. That phenomenon of craving sets in with us because we have a chemical imbalance. I think Adam was talking about that too. That's exactly the way it was with me. I didn't know that back then. I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue about all this stuff. I drank for two things. One thing, really, I drank because, just like the book says, I like the effect that is produced by alcohol. The first, I'm from Graham, Georgia. That's between Hazelhurst and Baxley in South Georgia. I was raised about so far back in the sticks until they pumped sunshine in. I'm one of them that is cropped tobacco. Some of you don't even know what that is. But I cropped a backer. I had a stringer that stringed her backer on sticks. I hung it in the barn. We had sand lugs. Sand lugs is the very bottom. And we got dirt in them. When we got through cropping the backer, we'd go jump in the creek. And the fella we was cropping for would throw us a bar of soap. We'd take a bath. And when I got home, Mama never did have to say, it's supper time. She never did have to say, it's time to go to bed. Because, son, when I got there, I knew what time supper was, and I ate. And I knew when I was time to go to bed, because I was wrath. I was always high strung. But I never did fit in. I just didn't. I had that feeling. I even wondered if Daddy was my daddy. And if I showed you a picture of him, we'd look like twins. But I just, you know, I had all them feelings of inferiority, fear, all, you know, them old icky feelings. Them old feelings that just, I wasn't in the right place. I needed something. I went to a dance. We called it a sock hop. But we was barefooted. But they put sawdust on the floor of the gym, and if y'all had ever done this, it made it slick, and you could dance. I was scared of girls, and I couldn't dance. Well, this old boy come by one time, and he said, I don't know, I was in high school, I don't remember what year, but he says, Randy, you on a cool blue? I said, a what? He said, a cool blue. I said, what the hell are you talking? He said, come on. We went by there, and he gave me a tall blue ribbon beer. I popped that thing and turned it up and spit that stuff out. That's the worst taste stuff. Oh, God, that was bad. But, you know, I kept turning it up until it got to going down. And once it got to going down, I want y'all to know, John Travolta didn't have nothing on me. I went back in that gym, son, and I picked every girls up, and I could talk the trash. I had sawdust in the back of my head, on my back. I mean, y'all remember the bump? Son, I could do the bump. I could do all this stuff. This is later on. It wasn't bumping back then. You know, back then it was another kind of dancing, you know. We were jitterbugging and all this kind of stuff. It was the deal. I couldn't do it, but dadgum put, I was out there and they didn't know it. And that's what it, and I honestly believe, people, from that day till I had my last drink, that's what I was looking for. You know, ain't it something the way that we start off and all of that stuff goes away and you have a blast? It does it for you. But before I ended up and woke up in that treatment center, I was locked up in a place like Joe was talking about the other night. I was in a trailer, peeping out the window, wondering, somebody's looking for me. I don't know who it is, but they looking for me. The telephone would ring, and I'd sit there, and Lena wasn't about to answer it. I wasn't about to answer it. That there's when times, you know, that she'd let me stay at the house, because she run me off about once a month. I'd be gone about a week, or I'd be gone a week and come back. She'd tell me to leave. You know, it's hell when you at the house and the daggum deputy knocks on the door and you go and open the door and your wife says, Randy, the deputies were here wanting to talk to you. You look outside, you don't see your car. God almighty knows. What does he want? So I said, I'll be there in a minute. So I kept sitting there. He'll leave in a minute. Finally, I walk over there and I say, yes, sir. You know, I know he's going to put him on me. And he says, Randy, look. And you look out there, and the driveway where you turn in, your front wheels in the drive, and the ditch and the tail end sticking up in the air. And the deputy says, I want that moved. I'm not going to give you a ticket, but I want that moved. But you don't drive it because I still smell you from here from last night. So tell her to get somebody to get a tractor or something and come move, get that car sticking out of the road. And you say, whew. And another thing is when you get in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're here for about 6 or 8 months to a year, and you're sitting in a meeting and a lady walks in and she gets a cup of coffee and she turns around and she says, they told me to find Randy Sellers. Is he sitting here? I don't know whether to raise my hand or not. That fear's still there, folks. I mean, it might be been a while, but you know. Finally, you do like this. It's me. And she says, the EAP from the railroad told me to look you up and you could tell me where some meetings are. But, you know, that's the way it was. And mine went from there. And, you know, my first wife, we was married for a while. And then after that, it went on. I could get into it. You know, I abuse that lady every way in the world. We got the two girls that called me this morning. Me and her had it in there. And I got married to her when I was 17 years old. I never even had been out of Jeff Davis County. I was like a little, you ever put, I tell you what, sometimes take a little puppy and put a chain on him and chain him on a 3-foot chain. And let him stay there for about a week and then turn him loose. He's going to run wild. Son, he'll run everywhere. Like, that's the way it was when I left Jeff Davis County and went to Waycross. Son, they had bars. I started going in them bars. See, when I started drinking, I wasn't about, I don't know, 14, 15 year old, something like that. When I started going in them dances and all that, had that blue. And when I went to Waycross, I thought I'd die. And the reason I went to Waycross, I tell people that I went to go to work with the railroad, which was half true. The real reason is I had to leave Jeff Davis County because that was my hometown. And I run off and left my wife and my kid, and I took all the money. And I ended up in Corpus Christi, Texas. I don't know why Corpus Christi, Texas. The only thing I know, another guy ended up there. And I called back home to get and asked Daddy to send me some money for I could get back home. And Daddy wasn't there. My ex-wife answered the phone. You know, up to my daddy's death, I never talked to him about that. They were dragging the Altamahaw River. They thought we had drowned, and they were dragging the river. And he didn't think that was funny at all. So we didn't talk about that. But that's the way it all started with me, with stuff just like that. Then I got to Waycross. I started going to bars. And you know what's in bars? It's like you go in there to find women. That's like, you know, Daddy asked me one time, said, Randy, listen, do you drink the whore up or whore up the drink? You know, that's like salt and pepper. It all goes together. I mean, I don't know. That's just the way life is. I mean, I didn't think nothing about alcoholism or drank too much. I thought that the way everything was. That's just the way life is. You drank, you black out. I had blackouts, Lord of mercy. After that lady divorced me, I was at Hub's one night. That's the bar. I used to go to some nice bars. The Boar's Heads. Bloody Bucket. Yeah, the Bloody Bucket, when you went in there, they'd search you for a knife and gun. If you ain't got one, they'd give you one. I mean, that's just the way it was. We tried to rate some good bars. I mean, it was some dealies. It was real fun when they'd bring a cow in there and we'd ride him or ride the cow instead of, you know. It was a dirt floor jug. And we'd ride to see which one could stay on long enough. Hell, half of it would have to be helped to get on him. I mean, you know. Then the real deal come out, the mechanical bull. Oh, Lord, that like to kill us. But see, I mean, that was a good time, I reckon. But, you know, me and Linda, I was single for about a year maybe. And Linda came in my life right in the middle of my alcoholism. With my first wife, I went to treatment in 1977. I was 25 years old, and I sat in there, and I listened to them people. I was in Peachford in Atlanta. It was one of them nice ones, Adam, you know, that they had the pool and the, you know, you could sunbathe, you know, like you, yeah. It was the railroad paid for it. Not I didn't. I didn't have nothing. But I was in there, and I know them people need to be somewhere. But that's where I learned about the dope. I knew nothing about stuff like that. I got back to the house. I got on the marijuana maintenance program. They call it marijuana. We called it herb. It had to be natural, you know. The only thing, you know, I remember the first time I was smoking that stuff, I did it take about two hits for me, and I was messed up. But I remember sitting there looking across, and Linda had just cooked a big baked ham. And I knew I had found it. I fell in love. I fell in love with rice and gravy and pork chops and them big old hams. I got to hook that thing, folks, and I was eating it like a barbarian. I'm talking about, and I looked up across her, and my oldest daughter was sitting there like. But that's all it done for me. And when I eat, it messed up my drinking. So me and that didn't get along. Something I did get along with was the Black Beauties, the OPs, the Speed. God almighty. You talking about drinking some liquor. Son, you could, it's like running 90 miles an hour with your feet tied to the floor. And I mean, you know, me and Linda, I could get her to smoke a little of that herb with me. And I don't know how many of you remember Mork and Mindy. Me and Linda would sit there, and we'd get the kids to bed, and we'd sit there, and it wouldn't take about two or three hits for us. And we'd take us some of that, and we'd sit there and say, ah, just laugh. And I seen that here a while back, and I thought, what was so damn funny about it? And I told my daughter, don't never answer the phone if Daddy calls. Never. Because she knew what we were smoking. Well, one night, we was watching Mork and Mindy, and I was wiped out. And Jennifer walked in there and said, Dad, telephone. I said, who is it? She said, Papa. Oh, God. He done heard me say, what is it? He knows I'm there. I said, hello. He says, what you doing? I said, I don't know. And I started laughing. He said, what you laughing at? I said, I don't know. And it said, click. And that's the way it was. I mean, me and Linda would watch stuff and do stuff and all. And them youngers would come in there sometime. We'd be in the floor rolling, laughing. And they'd say, what y'all laughing at? And me and her would look at each other and say, I don't know. And that's just the way it went. I mean, that's the way. And folks, I'm telling you, if I could have just smoked marijuana, if I could have just drank beer, there'd be somebody else standing here this morning. But I'm one that can't just do that. See, if I'm going to do that, it always leads on. It always leads on. When me and Linda got together, I thought that I had died and went to heaven. See, she didn't tell y'all about her daddy making shine. Her daddy made shine whiskey. And y'all ain't drank liquor until you get the drinking kind of shine. You know, her daddy made selling liquor and drinking liquor. And that drinking liquor, you could turn it up, and it was just as white as you could turn it up. When it went down, never burned a bit. But when you set it down, it was like, I mean, he knew how to fix some good whiskey. So when I met her, I really thought of that. And her brothers, man, they was a good time. But they were some of these kind of drinkers like this. We'd have a fish fry, and we'd drink whiskey. You know, they'd take the cap off of that quart jar and throw it away and start passing around. Well, when I got it, I kept it. They'd say, "Damn, Randy, you ain't going to pass it around?" And I'd keep drinking it, and finally I'd pass it. And I said, you know, I have found it. And you could go in there to the table, and there was, you know, all kind of Lord Calvert, Canadian Club. I tell people that I found Linda Washington. They lived on right off of the Swamp Road. The swamp is the Okefenokee Swamp. And they live right off of it. I said, well, this is how I found her. I was riding down the Swamp Road. She was walking up the side of the road. She had rings around her leg between her knees and ankles where she'd been walking around that swamp all her life. And I bought her a ready roll cigarette and gave her some red liquor, and I had her ever since. And I mean, everybody just laugh. And Linda sat there and say, "That is not funny." Well, she was looking for adventure, damn. You know, she was talking about motorcycles. Us being on the motor. What she didn't tell you is that thing had a fairing on it. Y'all know what a fairing is. It's got a pocket on each side. On this side, I had a fifth of Strawberry Hill. On this side, I had a fifth of Mr. Boston. In this pocket, I had a pack of Herb. In this pocket, I had Blacks, OPs, Yellow Jackets. Y'all know what all that is. You know, that's the Pops. And that's the way we lived. And something happened. First time I hit Linda, I remember her going over a king-size bed. Now, she's got eight brothers. But when she come over that bed, it was like the damn Incredible Hulk. She tore her damn shirt. She jumped on me and started beating the hell out of me. I'm talking about I finally got my pistol. I got my .38 and got her off of it. She was going to kill me. I'm telling you. She had forks, knives. I ain't never seen nobody. And, you know, I still got pistol right in her face. It cocked. I told her to get up, get out, get off of me. Of course, it wasn't loaded, but it really was. I mean, that's how, and folks, we lived like that, like she said, for 3 years. When we fought, it wasn't this. Now, it was some of this, but I got scars. I'm talking about from this here, from damn knives and forks. And what she was talking about, she was really going to kill me. She would have. Because, you know, she was not my first wife. Me and her would fight. And, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not proud that I slapped a woman. But I look at it this day and time as these women that'll tear your ass up if you don't watch it. You can put your hand on them, you see what happens. I ain't got no sympathy for them today because they will get. I have had mine tore up by this one. Especially when I was drunk. I learned right quick. Son, if you draw back, you better watch it because you fixing to get it. You better watch it. But that's the way we was. That's the way. And you know, we thank God because of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. The healing has come. And you know, it is funny. But look at this. Right in the middle of this is four kids. They didn't choose for all this. You know, they talked yesterday about the family illness. This is definitely the family. The young'uns would not. See, it was at the point to where, you know, they wouldn't. I think Joe was talking about a moment of clarity. One of my moments of clarity was one morning I would get up and I kept a gallon of shine under the sink in the bathroom. And I'd go up there and I'd brush my teeth and gag. Y'all know how that goes. You know, trying to brush your teeth. And once I'd get that done, I'd reach down there and take that gallon of liquor. And I'd turn it up, about two or three bubbles. I'm a guzzler. I'm not a sipper. But I'd about two or three bubbles go down, and I'd put it down. And that was my drinking. That was where I got started. Well, on this morning, I remember the bathroom door just creaked a little bit. And I turned around and looked. When I did, for it seems like eternity, but my eyes met Jennifer's eyes, my oldest daughter. I'm talking about eye to eye. And just for a moment, I knew it had me. I knew what I was. I had that brief moment of clarity. But what did I do? I reached under there, took that jug up, glue, set it back down. I looked back and she was gone. See, she didn't open that door and say, "Daddy, would you take me to school? Daddy, would you have breakfast with me? Daddy, could I bring somebody over tonight?" See, that youngin' only wanted to know one thing, which way to go. That's all she knew. Which way do I go today? How's Daddy going to be? And that answered what she needed. That's the way it was, folks. And you know, I'm standing here this morning, and I'm sober, fairly in my right mind. And I ain't had a drink all day. If you got up before 7 o'clock, you've been sober today longer than me. Now, I got over 35 years sobriety. And that's the difference in sobriety and sober. I've been sober since 7 o'clock this morning. I got 35 plus years sobriety. Out there's learning how to live that Adam was talking about last night. You know, I hear it, and sometimes I think we try to just take a little bit too lightly that alcohol is just a symptom of what's wrong with us. I know the big book tells us that. But it, with me, it's the main symptom. Because it don't touch. See, I got a gun up here, it's cocked. And with me and my type of drinking and my type of alcoholic I am, one drink and this shot and I'm gone. You'll see me again if I live. See, today they stuff out there. I used to tell people, go get you some whiskey if you don't think you had enough. Go get you some. But folks, they stuff out there today that's killing them. We'll pick our paper up at home and Waycross, as small as it is. And we'll pick that paper up, and you see them dead at 30, 35, 32, 28. And it says they die from unknown causes. They die from short illnesses. We know what that is. Exactly, we know what it is. So I don't tell people that today. The door doesn't swing both ways. It has for some people, but some of them it don't. Some of them die. They don't die in vain, neither. There's always a reason. You know, I sat here the other night and I was listening to Joe when he was talking. And Joe, I tell you, I got a lot out of it. And Adam last night. And Linda, I think that's the best talk I ever heard her give. Or either I heard it wrong. I don't know. And I've heard her many times. I've heard her many times. But it was... But the thing about it, it's like every time I hear it, there's something there. I could listen to him again. I could listen to you again. We sitting out here eating supper last night. And me and him and Linda was talking. It was like I was just absorbing. And that's the way this, that's the reason we need it over and over how it works. But when I come to that treatment center and I learned how to do this stuff, I was sitting there and I'd done my four step. Yeah, you have to do a four step in treatment before you can get out. And I was really doing an honest four step. And I made the gravest mistake that a drunk can make. I went to an AA meeting, and I was looking at the walls, and it had a sign that said there's 12 steps, and I seen step four. I said, oh, I'm on step four. I'm doing that inventory. And then I read step five. And after that, I heard nothing else. After that, I had to get back to that treatment center because I had a whole book, about a half of a book of evil about me. And they told me to never put it on paper and sign it. And I had to get back and get rid of that stuff. And I did. I got back and tore all that stuff up and burned it and threw it away. And I wrote me a four step, about a page, maybe a half page. Said I'm ready to go do my fifth step. People, I wasn't ready to get honest about death, nothing, no. No. And that counselor says, you ain't going to stay sober 30 days. I showed that son again. I stayed sober for about two and a half months I stayed sober. And when I got drunk this time, that's when I went and learned all about the rest of the stuff. And the rest of it's history. Me and Linda got together. When me and her got together, we was at that party at the bar with her brother. They said, I said, what's going on back there? They said, there's a private party. You can't go back there. Shit. You know what that meant. I got back there. Me and Linda got over there, and they introduced her to her. And me and her got out there, and we, you know, we was belly rubbing. I found out some things right quick. She had a car. She had a driver's license. She had some money. And she had a place to live. Met all my needs. It didn't take me 10 seconds. So, son, right then, you ever seen when the puzzle where it just fits together, all the damn sickness? Well, that's me and her just feeling sick right there. That's when we just went off in the sunset, fell in love, stayed with each other every time. And all these people tell it. She'd tell me about the lawyer telling her all that. And I said, oh, that son of a gun is just jealous. I used to go with his wife. I didn't even know her. You know, I always had an answer, you know. I could throw it right back on her. And bless her heart, she believed everything I told her. I was a living lie. You know, a fake. That's it. I was a pure out old fake. And I guess that's the reason today I hear people say, fake it till you make it. And that makes me sick. It's a fake is a fake. And I don't care how you put it. And I believe in getting honest, and that's the way I was taught. I was taught old AA. And that's the way it happened to me. See, I'm sitting out, and I've meant to tell you, I'm standing here this morning, and I'm sharing with y'all, and I can't take the credit, not one bit of credit for my sobriety. It is all a gift from God. I woke up in that damn detox center. I don't even remember getting there. My sister and my mother carried me to Atlanta. She said that on 285 bypass, by God, I was going to drive, and I had poured that Boone Farm strawberry hill all down my shirt, and I puked all up, and I was going to drive. By God, I was going to drive. Me and her like to have a fight on the side of 285. I'm just telling y'all what they told me. I think they exaggerate a little bit. But anyway, that's what they told me. And so I woke up in that treatment center, and I can't tell you why I ain't had a drink since then, or I ain't went crazy as hell since then. I can tell you this. After I got out of there, I was on a mental ward for about three or four days. And then they moved me over to the other side. But I do remember this. I walked out, and I was standing in front of a doctor's office. And I can't, I mean, it was like I looked up in the sky and God showed me my past and the way my life was going. I could see it. I could see my first marriage. I could see Linda. And I knew Linda was through with me. I knew I'd done drank that up too. I knew it. I just knew it was over, like you were talking about, Jay. I mean, I just cried. You can call it the sinner's prayer. You can call it the alcoholic prayer, whatever you want to call it. But I just broke down and started crying. And I said, God, please help me. I can't take it no more. And when I said that, I opened my eyes and I seen a plane. I mean, I seen an airplane. And a lady walked by and said, good morning. And I plumb jumped and looked around at her. I mean, there's a lady, Polly. She says that God's children can see what they can see and hear what they can hear, not until. And I think it was my time to hear and see. Because I had never seen or heard anything like that. And I went back in there and I told that counselor what had happened. And I am so grateful for these treatment facilities back in the 80s. Because he didn't sit there and start laying the counseling on me. He said, come on, Randy. We went to my room. He said, get down on your knees. He opened the book. Me and him done the third step prayer together. And he says, go do a fourth step. Here's your pencil and a paper. He says, I've got to be honest. He opened the book up again. And he says, it says here, all that counts, Randy, is thoroughness and honesty. So that's up to you. This is your four step. This is your four step. Nobody else's. And he said, it's determined on down 6 and 7, 8 and 9, the rest of it. This is determined how well you're going to do the rest of them. I said, how's that? He said, you'll know later. That's all he would say. And so I did. I was as honest as I think I could be at that time. Now, I did leave out something. And everybody's got one. I don't know what yours is. It's that thing we're going to take to the grave. Nobody will never know. It's terrible. It's bad. Golly. I left it out around 4 or 5 years sobriety. I come the closest to getting drunk that I ever have in my life. I was dreaming about it. And it was pertaining to sex. Most of it is, you know. It tells us in our book, we all sick there. But who is it to judge us? God. It ain't up to me to judge you or you to judge me about my sex problems. That's between me and God. And that's where the answers is in our book. It's a textbook. It's a basic text. You know, if you look at them steps, it tells you how to do that step, what will happen when you take that step, and what you do next. It tells us in the book if we just open it up and look at it. I went to a big book study, Joe and Charlie. Y'all know Joe and Charlie. Oh, Lord, I went there and I come back on fire. Oh, Lord, I said, you know, everybody had to go here and Joe and Charlie. And I walked in there and old Juke Livingston, he was one of my sponsors, and I was telling Juke about it. Juke says, where'd you go? I said, the big book study, Joe and Charlie. He says, how long was you there? I said, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. He said, 2 nights in a motel? I said, yeah. He said, how much did you eat? I told him. He said, how much you spend? I said, I don't know. Took it back in. It was like $300 or $400, something like that, Juke. He says, well, next time you need somebody to read the big book to you, I'll do it for $100. I looked at him and I thought to myself, how stupid can you be, Randy? I mean, all I've got to do is just open it. And if you'll get somebody, you know, my sponsor could tell me what it, you know, explained it to. See, I had to have somebody to explain this stuff to me with the books. People used to tell me I was doing stuff. I never will forget when I was delegate. I was putting stuff in the message and I was doing writing. And I was using Bill's writing and stuff like that. And Russ, put a thing on her that I was paraphrasing. And I was. And I went to Danny. And I said, "Danny, what the hell is paraphrasing?" And Danny says, "That's when you use something somebody else wrote and you don't give them the credit." I said, "Well, I'll be damned." He says, "You ain't doing that, are you?" I said, "Yeah, I've been doing it all the time." I said, "Russ, hell, told me I was doing it. Sent me a letter and all." I said, "Hell, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about." And he thought was, Danny liked to fell over. He says, "Well," I said, "well, I wasn't exactly doing the whole sentence. I was just using parts." He said, "Well, you still have to give people the credit." I said, "Well, damn, I didn't know it. I mean, you know, people have to explain stuff to me. Instead of, you know, that we don't." I thought, hell, you know, back then, Russ, I thought everybody knew the big book. And when you write something, if you write something about the big book, if they ain't reading it, I thought everybody was in him to be sober. Everybody was here. Everybody was honest. There were no fighting and all this stuff. And I'm like, something ain't right. And they'd tell me, "You ain't right, Randy. You don't know. You got to ask." And that's the way things go like that. Get you somebody to show that book to you, and you can learn how to stay sober. That's been my experience. Y'all know why I was delegate. Let me tell you some of the things that happened while I was delegate. One thing, I got to go to New York 3 times. I'm the only 3, like he was saying. Bo, one of our delegates, got drunk. And it was a bad time in our state, in our area then. It was a bad time. But did you know when that guy, when he died, he did not die in vain. This state, this area come together in unity like you had never seen it before. People would come up to me when I was the delegate and all, and they'd pat me on the back and say, "Randy, you're doing such a great job." And I was like, "Me? Man, it ain't, hey, that's not me. I'm just one of God's servants. God is doing this. Look at the guy that died." I mean, there is a reason for it. It's like I'm standing here this morning. Somebody needs to hear something I got to say. I don't know what it is. Joe was here Friday night. Somebody needed something he had. I don't think nothing. Adam was here. Somebody needed to hear it. I don't know what it was. But nothing happens by accident. I believe that. There's always a reason. God works in mysterious ways. I believe that. But while I was delegate, I did get to go to New York. Can't y'all see me in New York? I had a ball, y'all. I had a blast. I ain't kidding you. But we went to Stepping Stone. While we went, and when we went to Bill's house, they took half of the delegates one time and half the other time. And when we went in Bill's house, we walked in there, and then I was standing, and it was like something was pulling me. Something was saying, "Randy, up on the hill, there's something." And I had never been there. I walked outside, backed up a little bit, and I looked back up there on that hill, and I seen a little block building. And so I left the rest of them because it was like something was telling me to go up there. And I went up there to that little building, and when I walked around where the front door was and opened it, there was a desk and a chair and a big book on that desk. I could not hold it back. I went down. I mean, it was, I'm not saying Bill Wilson's a saint. He ain't nowhere near damn saint, I know that. But the Spirit of God was there. It was like up there in the room this morning. He was there. No doubt. Me and Linda went to Akron to Dr. Bob's house. We went and we met a couple from Arkansas, and we were sitting there at the table. And we all of a sudden, we was just all talking to each other. We was having the damnedest meeting you ever seen, y'all. And then all of a sudden, all four of us just stopped. And we looked in the middle of that table, and the coffee pot that Bill, when he went to see Dr. Bob, was sitting there. I knew he was there. He was there. We all looked at each other and just broke down, all four of us. Things like that would have never happened if I hadn't gotten service work. Because I was a delegate in the very 16, I got to go to the International in San Diego, Adam. And we was riding down the street in the van. And I looked over there, and I'll be damned, there stood Sarah Jane and Brookings in San Diego, California. We was walking down going to get registered, and all of a sudden somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around, and there was Johnny and Joy. Right there in San Diego. I mean, what's the chances? Well, I had to do a presentation because I was Air 16 delegate. I had to do a presentation, and they told me what my thing, and I had it all together, my speech and all this stuff. I might have paraphrased a little bit too, Russ. I don't know, but anyway. I had it all fixed up, and we were sitting there, and the chairman was looking. There's supposed to be two of us. Each one of us had 30 minutes. And we sat there and we waited. Nobody said nothing. So finally, this chairman, I said, "Where in the hell is the other delegate?" He says, "I don't know." I said, "Well, what are we going to do?" He says, "Randy, you're going to have to tell your story." I looked out there, and they might have been 700-800 in that room, something like that. But I seen 1,000,000. I seen 1,000. I ain't never seen many people in my life. I mean, I lied out of that. I said, "No, we can't do that. No." He said, "Yes, yes." And he got up and he said, "We can't gonna do much reading. We're no gonna. Let's start with Serenity Prayer." They done Serenity Prayer. He said, "We changing the program a little bit. I wanted y'all to welcome Randy S. from Waycross, Area 16, Panel 44. And I just looked up. So I got up and I gave him what I had. I mean, you know, I just like this morning, I'm giving you what I got. And I started laying it out there. And after it was over, they had mics set up out there. And I seen a lady get up. I could tell she was pregnant. She was wobbling. She come walking all the way around, and I said, "What the world?" And about the time she started to get to the mic, I noticed it was our oldest daughter. She was pregnant with our first grandchild. She walked up to that mic, and she said, "I think this is the time to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for my daddy's life." I knew why I was in San Diego. I was not there by chance or accident. I knew when I was there. I didn't know she was there. I knew she was stationed over there. But I never dreamed that girl would be there. And if it hadn't been for service work, I'd have never got that opportunity. I'd have never made it to there's places like that. We were sitting in Toronto at the International Convention. And I was sitting beside this guy, and we were just a-talking, drinking coffee, just a-talking. And I said, "You know, when I done my third step," I said, "I had to get out on my knees." And I said, "You know, Dr. Bob, he never would sponsor anybody unless they first prayed with him." And this guy sat inside of me. He said, "Your dad was like that." I said, "Oh, okay." And so I kept talking, and I stopped. And I looked back at him, and I said, "What'd you say?" He said, "Daddy, you said Daddy'd make them pray when he if he was going to sponsor me, I had to pray with him. He said, Daddy was like that. I said, you Dr. Bob's son? He said, yeah, I'm Junior, but I'm an Al-Anon. I mean, me and him sat there, and people, I ain't got the time to tell you about sitting there talking to a man that was the co-founder of this fellowship that God used to help us. The time that we said, I could have spent days with that man just listening to him coming up talking about Dr. Bob. But if it hadn't been for service, I'd have never had that opportunity. Canada's 50th anniversary of the Big Book. We got to go to it. And I was up there and we were selling hot dogs. And I was up there hollering, hot dogs, one, get your hot dogs. And the one that sold the most hot dogs got the prize to take back to the area. Well, this one of these guys come over and they finally stopped. Because I was selling them like crazy. They come over and they said, we got to quit. This is not fair. And I said, what ain't fair about it? They said, Randy, they're not coming here to get hot dogs. They're coming to here to hear you talk. Your voice is just, there's English and there's South Georgian. So at the conference, when I was at the conference, the chairman says, this year we have got 5 different languages at our conference. But this year we've got 6. And everybody said, 6? Anybody, you know, what is the 6th one? You know the 6th one, you know? And I can't remember his name. He came to our assembly and all. Donnie, you might remember his name. He was the chairman up there, Danny. Anyway, he said, Randy, would you stand up? I stood up and I said, what have I done? Like that. He said, there's our 6th language. But he was always picking. I mean, me and Julio got together with him and told him we'd take care of things. Julio was from Puerto Rico, and he couldn't speak English. And I couldn't speak Spanish, so we called each other was our sponsor because we didn't know what the hell each other was saying. I want to thank the committee for inviting me and Linda up here this weekend. It has been a great, great weekend. And I want to hush with this. You know, I've been telling you so much about how God has intervened and worked in mine and Linda's life throughout my sobriety and throughout really her sobriety. And we're so grateful, you know, to be here this weekend and got to see some good old friends. And good old friends. You know, it's nothing like it. When I seen Donna the other night, it was my heart just boom, 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 you know. Because me and her served as DCM together, I think it was. And and that's back in the 80s, y'all. I might tell our age in a minute, Donna. But this is where, if you know, God is big. If you having a problem with him, I'll share mine with you, okay? And I have to do that by telling you this. I was in Louisville at a conference up there. And I'd been sober a pretty good while. I had a good bit of sobriety. And I was sitting there talking to a guy, and he said, Randy, tell me about your God. And I said, God is good, God is love, God is everywhere, God is, I mean, hell, what you want me to say? He said, you don't really know him, do you? I said, yeah, I know him. I said, by God, tell me about you, God. He said, I can easily do it. He said, it goes like this here. He said, they was a cobbler. And he died, and when he died, he went to heaven, and he was sitting there, and he was talking to God, and God was looking through his book, and he said, cobbler, I see here that you believed in God 100%. I mean, you believed in everything 100% except God. Why? The man said, well, God, if just one time I could have seen you, if just one time I could have touched you, or if just one time I could have heard you, I believe I would have believed 100%. God smiled at him and says, you remember one time when you was working, this little girl come by and she was limping, and you brought her in your office, and you did that stuff there, and you fixed her shoe, and you then went back to work, and she started out the door, and when she got at the door, you heard the door open, you looked up, and she turned around and smiled at you. You remember that? He said, yeah, I remember that. He said, remember the time the little old lady was walking by and you didn't know her or nothing, but you could tell she was lost or something, and you went out and got her and brought her in and you was talking to her. And you found out that her son was two doors down. And you went down there and got her son. He come down, y'all had good fellowship. And when she started to go, she opened the door and she turned around and looked at you. She said, bless you, my son. He said, you remember that? He said, yeah, I remember that. He said, remember the time the old drunk come in? He asked you, did you have $5? You didn't have $5. You'd give it all to your family. But you told him you had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the back, and you split it with him with a cold Coca-Cola. And you and him went back there, and y'all split that peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and y'all drank that Coke. And y'all had good fellowship, and he started to go, and you took him, and you hugged him, and you hugged him close. Do you remember that? He said, yeah, I remember that. He said, I was there the whole time. He said, the little girl's smile was my smile. The little bless you, my son, was my voice. And the old drunk's hug was my touch. I was there the whole time. Now, folks, you give on any given day, like today. When I woke up this morning at 7 a.m., laying inside of me is a lady that I love very much. And I got up and went in the bathroom and done a little bit, and I come back in. I walked over and I kissed her on the cheek. And when I did, she said, I love you. If I want to believe that's my God talking to me, I can. Or that girl in California, the one that survived alcoholism, she's an attorney now. She went and got her a degree. She come and spent some time with her daddy and mama. Back then, I had an old Harley. Me and her got on that thing. We went up to Savannah, to the beach. We went to Jack down to A1A. We had just a blast. Ended up back at Jacksonville Airport. That girl got off of that thing. It's the same one that was in the International. But she was going down that thing to get back on that plane, and about halfway down, she turned around, and she waved at her daddy and smiled. If I want to believe that's my God smiling at me, I can. Or I don't know. My mother passed in March. And you know, Mama always would grab and hold her son. And I felt safe in my mama's arms. And she helped me like a mother holds a son. If I want to believe that's my God touching me, I can. Now some of you might sit there and say, that's not right. But the feeling that you got is Him. That is God. He is in every one of us. Look in the book. The book says when you are born and every man and woman is a fundamental belief in God. It don't tell you you got to believe. It says just be willing. That's the start. But He's in here. See, we got to clean up from the inside out. Once you get this inside cleaned up, it shines. It shines. Remember, poor Lee. Remember to love each other. And be quick to forgive each other as we trudge our way of happy destiny. Thank y'all and God bless.